Behind all the economic news that we've been talking about in the past days and weeks, it looks like September is turning out to be a tense month between the U.S. and Pakistan, its major ally in the war on terror. Last week, there were reports that Pakistani and U.S. forces were trading gunfire along the Afghanistan border, and that wasn't the first time of those kinds of reports. Joining us now to take a look at U.S. policy is former ambassador to Pakistan, Wendy Chamberlain. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
How would you describe the current state of relations between the U.S. and Pakistan?
Well, I think in a word, combustible. Look, for decades, Pakistan and the United States has had a very difficult relationship. On the one hand, it's been based on a mutual need, and on the other hand, it's been based on mutual distrust. The United States now is very worried that its major threat inside Afghanistan, as we fight with NATO troops to secure Afghanistan and stabilize it, 40% of the attacks are coming from extremist groups that cross the border. At the same time, the Pakistan government is also worried about these same extremist groups that seem to have whiplash and are attacking it. It has the newly democratic elected government has a population that's very worried, frightened because of the high food prices and high energy prices. And it has an army that doesn't sort of get it. It's still fighting its traditional enemy, the Indians, that it sees as a huge power on the eastern border and now forming alliances with the Karzai government in Afghanistan on its western border. So you've got a soup that is highly spiced and very dangerous.
So in your estimation, what needs to happen now, and how did that relationship evolve or devolve, I should say, between the U.S. and the Pakistans to this point?
Well, we made some critical errors after 2002. I think three critical errors. For the first when we successfully routed the Taliban regime from Kabul, we let it disperse in the countryside where it regrouped because, under our watch, the poppy crop, the opium crop, came back in full force, and its funding the thugs, the Taliban, and the warlords. The second mistake we made, huge mistake, is we took our eye off the ball in Afghanistan, and we pulled our troops and our best intelligence officers and sent them to Iraq. And while we were consumed by what we were doing in Iraq, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda came back again, regrouped. And the third mistake is that we allowed Al-Qaeda, Pakistan allowed Al-Qaeda to find sanctuary in Pakistan, where it is now growing in power.
Now, when you look back at your time when you served in Pakistan, that would be 2001 and 2002, what do you think the Bush administration could have done differently to set a different tone or to take a different path than the one that we find ourselves on now?
Well, I think we should have realized, we did realize, but we should have been more forceful in persuading the Pakistan government and the Pakistan army that we actually share a common enemy, that they can't control the Al-Qaeda. You know, we use a shorthand in the United States. We call it Taliban and Al-Qaeda. In fact, when you begin to drill down and look at the extremist groups along the border, it's a snarl of different types of groups. You have the Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda, which we both oppose. You have Mullah Omar's Afghan Taliban, which many say has regrouped in Quetta inside Pakistan. But you have old extremist groups that the U.S. supported with Pakistan to rout the Soviets back in the 80s and 90s from Afghanistan. Now, that's the Hekmatyar groups and the Jalaluddin Haqqani groups. And Pakistan has assumed that they could control and were allied with those groups. They're not. They're now attacking Pakistan and attacking us. And then you have the even nastier groups of the Jaish-e-Mohammed and Laksh-e-Taiba that Pakistan's intelligence, ISI, has been supporting in Kashmir to harass the Indians. And they have regrouped allied with Osama bin Laden along the border of Afghanistan, and they are attacking the authorities in Pakistan. So it's created a monster in a way, which has become, in fact, a common enemy. But the Pakistani people and army kind of aren't there yet to realize that their former allies are now their biggest threats.
Well, that's the question, then. You say that the army in Pakistan doesn't get it. How is shooting at military positions and military forces of the Pakistani government, like the U.S. and NATO forces are doing, how is that going to encourage them to get it? Or alternatively, will it just encourage them to shoot back?
Well, they see their job as a traditional army as defending the sovereignty of Pakistan's borders. And I think it's misguided to think that the U.S. is challenging their sovereignty. We're not. We're actually, they need to get a flip from this distrust to realizing that we're in this together. We have a common enemy. Fortunately, President Zardari at the U.N. made some comments to that effect, understanding that that we have to work together on this. And I think that's the line that we need to take and need to pursue. We have a common enemy. We're not threatening Pakistan.
But when you say a common enemy, doesn't it depend on which element of the Pakistani government that you're talking about? Does it really matter who's in charge when you've got these competing elements? You've got the intelligence services, as you mentioned, the army, and then you have the political element.
Yeah, well, I think we need to work very closely with the army and with the ISI to make them understand that we are not threatening them, that we are, in fact, working with them, that they are as much threatened by these extremist groups that they had supported for years but now have gotten loose, gotten out of control. We have some work to do, and I think we're on the right track. Both sides are getting nervous enough that we know we have to come together on this.
Former Ambassador Wendy Chamberlain, thank you very much for joining us.
I might say I'm currently president of the Middle East Institute in Washington, D.C. now.
Well, thank you for ending that out cue for us.
Thanks.
She served as the U.S. Ambassador to Pakistan from 2001 and 2002 in the Bush administration.
We're always on at The Takeaway, and we're following the $700 billion bailout plan that will be voted on today in Congress. And we're talking about early voting and its role in the upcoming election.
And we're also asking you about the first presidential debate, so give us your thoughts at 877-8-MY-TAKE or drop us a note at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
Here's today's Takeaway.
It's sort of like going to the dentist. It's very uncomfortable, and no one likes it. It's very unpleasant, but it's only going to get worse if you put it off.
She's not talking about dentistry. That's Representative Carolyn Maloney from New York talking about the $700 billion bailout that everyone on the Hill is going to have to vote yes or no on. The package will be voted in the House this morning. The Senate will take it up on Wednesday. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Adora Udoji, and this is The Takeaway.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.